Hi everybody, and welcome to the Year 9 Science Podcast. This episode's about life. It describes how living things get energy, it covers cellular respiration, photosynthesis, food chains, and the way that matter cycles around ecosystems. So, every single living thing on Earth needs energy to function and, well, to live. Interestingly, all of the energy in living things on the entire planet actually originates from the sun. So the sun gives the Earth heaps of energy in the form of heat and also light every single day. But there's a very special group of organisms, you know them, they're called plants. And they can perform a very special thing called photosynthesis. And photosynthesis converts the light energy from the sun into chemical energy, which the plants can store. So because plants can basically produce chemical energy from light energy in the sun, they're called producers. And they're also known as autotrophs. Now, other groups of animals which have to eat plants to get chemical energy, so organisms that can't photosynthesize and produce their own chemical energy, they're called consumers. So they have to consume plants or other animals to get their energy, and they're called consumers or heterotrophs. And we're a good example of a heterotroph or a consumer, so we've got to eat plants and animals to get energy. And there's lots of different forms that energy can come in terms of, you know, food. We can get energy from carbohydrates, we can get our energy from fats, and we can also get our energy from protein. So proteins can be a source of energy. They're also really useful for us in, you know, building muscle. Carbohydrates are a very good source of energy for humans. They're actually called carbohydrates because they're made of carbon, hydrogen, and oxygen. So carbohydrates are made of those three elements. And fats, you know, is another type of food or group that we can get energy from. And fats actually contain the most chemical energy per gram out of those other three. So fats are the highest in energy. And we can measure the amount of energy in different foods. And we measure energy in food using the units joules. And we actually use kilojoules more often than not. So just like a kilometer is 1,000 meters, a kilojoule is 1,000 joules. And we often say a food has got this many, or, you know, maybe 1,000 kilojoules in it. So we need to eat foods, proteins, carbohydrates, and fats, to provide our body with nutrients, but really importantly, to provide our body with energy. But what do we need all that energy for? Well, actually, there's thousands of chemical reactions going on in your body right now. They're going on all the time. And all of those chemical reactions all together, if you combine them all, that's called your metabolism. Now, as I'm sure you know, we also need energy to, you know, run around the block or play sport and things like that. But we actually even need energy when we're asleep or just sitting down. So when we're running around, we need to eat more because we're using up way more energy. But even when we're in a resting state, we need to consume energy just to keep our bodies functioning. And when the amount of energy that we use in a resting state is called our basal energy requirement. So that's the basic level of energy that we need every day just to keep our bodies alive. And obviously if we go for a run or a walk or do anything really, we're going to need even more energy. So more energy than our basal energy requirement. So every single cell of every single living thing on Earth needs energy. And all the cells of all the living things on Earth actually get their energy via a very special chemical reaction. And the reaction is called cellular respiration, and it's crucial for all life on Earth. There are actually two different types of cellular respiration. There's aerobic respiration and anaerobic respiration. Aerobic respiration requires oxygen, and anaerobic respiration doesn't require any oxygen. And the first chemical reaction I'm going to talk about is aerobic respiration. Now, aerobic respiration requires two important molecules to take place. Oxygen is one of them, and we obviously get oxygen from the air we breathe, and glucose is the other molecule. So we get glucose from the food we eat. So glucose is a molecule that can be obtained from the breakdown of food. So we get it, you know, via our digestive system. So aerobic respiration starts with glucose and oxygen. And then in cells, in the presence of special things called enzymes, glucose and oxygen are converted into carbon dioxide and water and energy. Now, as I mentioned, aerobic respiration happens in the presence of enzymes, but enzymes aren't really a part of the chemical reaction. They basically help it take place. They're called biological catalysts, and catalysts basically help reactions go faster. So they're not changed or anything as part of the process enzymes, they're just there and they help the reaction go faster. Interestingly, aerobic respiration happens in a very special part of the cell called the mitochondria. So this is a special organelle inside the cell, and it's basically where aerobic respiration and cellular respiration takes place. So I'll give you the reaction again to help you remember it. It's glucose plus oxygen in the presence of enzymes goes to carbon dioxide plus water plus energy. But what's that energy? Well, the form of energy that cells use is actually a molecule called ATP, or adenosine triphosphate. So the energy that aerobic respiration produces is called ATP. And ATP is basically how cells use energy. It's the energy molecule of cells. Now, most organisms, most of the time, use aerobic respiration to get the energy they need, to get the ATP they need. But sometimes, some organisms can't get quite enough oxygen to their cells to supply the oxygen needed for aerobic respiration. So instead, those cells switch over to using anaerobic cellular respiration. So that's respiration without oxygen being present. For example, if we go for a 100-meter sprint, we can't breathe in enough oxygen and our heart can't pump it around to our muscles in our legs fast enough for the cells in our leg muscles to keep doing aerobic respiration. We can't get enough oxygen to our cells fast enough. So what happens is those cells in our muscles switch to using anaerobic respiration. So that's respiration without oxygen being present. And it's a way of kind of getting a quick burst of energy. So we use aerobic respiration most of the time, and sometimes some of our cells switch over to using anaerobic respiration. But there are some organisms, for example, some sorts of bacteria, use anaerobic respiration the whole time. They can only live in areas where there's no oxygen present. Now, interestingly, aerobic respiration provides our cells with about between 36 to 38 molecules of ATP, about 36 to 38 molecules of, you know, that energy. But anaerobic respiration actually only provides cells with 2 molecules of ATP. So you don't get as much energy when your cells use anaerobic respiration. Although the energy or the ATP is actually produced at a faster rate in anaerobic respiration. Now, interestingly, different organisms actually have different types of anaerobic respiration. So they both break down glucose to form energy, but the products of those chemical reactions are slightly different. So there are basically 2 anaerobic chemical reactions. The first one happens in animals, like us. What happens is glucose, in the presence of enzymes again, is broken down to lactic acid and energy in the form of ATP. But in plants and yeasts and bacteria, when anaerobic respiration happens, glucose is broken down in the presence of enzymes again, but in plants, yeasts, and bacteria, it's broken down into ethanol and carbon dioxide and energy in the form of ATP. So different versions of anaerobic respiration actually happen in animals or in plants and bacteria and things like that. So I've spoken about the fact that living things get the energy that they need by breaking down glucose, either aerobically in the presence of oxygen or anaerobically when there's no oxygen present. But how do living things get the glucose that they need to break down? Well, this is where another really crucial chemical reaction comes in. It's called photosynthesis. So plants, algae, and some microorganisms, bacteria, capture visible light from the sun and they convert it into chemical energy, basically in the form of glucose. Now, in the cells of photosynthetic organisms, photosynthesis takes place in a very special organelle called a chloroplast. And inside chloroplasts, there's a very special dye called chlorophyll. And chlorophyll is this molecule which absorbs the light energy from the sun normally, and it enables photosynthesis to take place. So photosynthesis also requires two other molecules to take place, carbon dioxide and water. And what happens is, in the presence of light energy, carbon dioxide and water are converted into that really important molecule glucose, as well as oxygen, as well as water molecules. So I'll go over the chemical reaction for photosynthesis one more time. Carbon dioxide plus water in the presence of light energy and chlorophyll and enzymes is converted into glucose plus oxygen plus water. So photosynthesis starts with carbon dioxide and water and ends up with glucose and oxygen and water, whereas cellular respiration starts with glucose and oxygen and ends up with carbon dioxide and water. So photosynthesis creates a molecule, glucose, which is like an energy storage molecule, and cellular respiration breaks down glucose to form ATP to basically use up that energy. So in terms of the, you know, cellular respiration is glucose and oxygen and makes carbon dioxide and water, and photosynthesis is carbon dioxide and water makes glucose and oxygen and water, they're very close to being the opposite to each other. Not quite. But often if you can remember one of those chemical reactions, you'll be quite easily able to remember the other one. They're close to being the opposite, but not quite. So photosynthetic organisms produce glucose, and glucose is the basic building block of all food production on this planet. So photosynthetic organisms are also called producers. They produce their own food. They're also known as autotrophs. Consumers are organisms that eat producers. So they can't produce their own food. They have to consume other organisms to get food. They're also called heterotrophs. So for example, a producer, apple tree, produces food, and then a consumer, a human, goes along and eats an apple. And what we've actually got there is what's called a food chain. So apple tree, and then the energy goes from the apple tree to the human. So it's, you know, the energy flows along this chain. In fact, often food chains are more than two organisms long. So, you know, a short food chain is apple tree, human, or grass is then eaten by a cow, but often there are longer ones. So for example, grass might be eaten by a grasshopper, and then a grasshopper might be eaten by a mouse, and then a mouse might be eaten by an owl, and then an owl might be eaten by a hawk. So what happens there is the grass is the producer, and then the grasshopper is called the first order consumer. So it's the first thing to eat something. And then the mouse is called the second order consumer. So it's the second thing to, you know, eat something. The mouse eats the grasshopper, which eats the grass. And then the owl is called the third order consumer. So the owl eats the mouse, which eats the grasshopper, which eats the grass. And then you could even have, in this case, a fourth order consumer. So the hawk eats the owl, which eats the mouse, which eats the grasshopper, which eats the grass. So that's an example of quite a long food chain. But normally in the real world, there are actually food webs. And food webs are like intertangled, lots of food chains all intertangled. Because in the real world, you know, a cow would also be eating the grass, and a human would be eating the cow. And you also might have lots of different bugs, which are eaten by grasshoppers too, and the mouse might eat, you know, grass as well as the grasshopper. So we end up with what's called a food web. So all energy arrives on Earth via the sun, and then producers turn it into chemical energy, and then it flows through ecosystems via food chains and food webs. And then, in fact, eventually, that energy slowly dissipates back out into the atmosphere as heat. You know, like your body produces heat, and slowly but surely, all of that energy is eventually lost. Conversely, matter, you know, so the things which make up your body, the atoms and the molecules in your body, never go back out into space. They all stay on Earth. So all of the matter, all of the stuff on Earth is actually slowly recycled. So if we think about our food chain from earlier, the stuff in the grass actually becomes part of the grasshopper. And then the grasshopper, the stuff in, you know, the matter in the grasshopper actually ends up becoming a part of the mouse, you know, part of the mouse's leg or something. And then when the owl eats the mouse, the things that made up the mouse become part of the owl. And then when the hawk eats the owl, the things that made up the owl become part of the hawk. And then by the time the hawk's that's the top order consumer, what happens in terms of that stuff is, and in fact all organisms, when they die, other organisms called scavengers or decomposers break down the living material and they use it, you know, for themselves to survive, but they eventually, all that matter is eventually returned to the environment. So that's what happens in terms of living things being, you know, recycled. Scavengers and decomposers do it. But we can also actually look at the way that single atoms or groups of atoms are cycled around the entire ecosystem. So things like nitrogen and water and carbon regularly just cycle around, you know, the ecosystem, around the whole planet Earth, really. So, you know, a nitrogen atom that was once part of a dinosaur might actually now be a part of you, and it might have just cycled around the atmosphere, become part of a plant or become part of a bacteria or become a part of gas in the air and may have eventually come around to being a part of you. So things cycle around the atmosphere. The water cycle is quite a good one to think about. I mean, basically, I think it's evaporation and rain. But water's part of all living things. You know, there's groundwater. Water's in plants and animals. And, you know, and of course, evaporates from the oceans. So water is constantly being cycled around, you know, the entire planet. The carbon cycle is another good one to think about. And it provides a good example of the way that matter cycles around ecosystems. So, for example, you know, carbon is in carbon dioxide in the air. But then plants take up carbon dioxide through photosynthesis to make glucose. But then animals eat plants and they use the glucose to create energy and they create carbon dioxide and they breathe it back into the air. But then the carbon might actually form a part of their body and then they might die and they might be buried over. And the carbon in their bodies, if they stay underground for thousands and thousands of years, that carbon might actually end up turning into fossil fuels, and then, you know, humans might burn the fossil fuels and the carbon dioxide will go back into the air and some of the carbon dioxide will be dissolved into the ocean, and seaweed will take up the carbon dioxide and then plants will eat the seaweed. So you can see that carbon is cycling around the atmosphere all the time very, very fast. And that's just, you know, another good example of a way that matter cycles constantly around the ecosystem. And that brings episode 6 of the Year 9 Science Podcast to a close. To learn more interesting stuff, head over to mrbarlow.wordpress.com. I'm Mr. Barlow, and thank you very, very much for listening.